fleet. Weather historian, I can tell you right now there was a typhoon out in the Pacific Ocean during that time, so yes, weather did impact the fleet getting there. I feel good today for a change, but I'm still very weak. And putting this book away and starting another so as not to lose my records if possible. And in doing so, Scotty forgets a day for leap year, which he omits from his calendar. So you're going to see it's actually February 29th, even though he lists March 1st. Only a few more days left here. The brush near us has taken an awful beating in the past weeks. Looks as though the whole Japanese army's been hunting us. We had a good night's sleep and I'm feeling better, but what we need is a wheelbarrow to help us walk upright again. After closing our February book, I tied it up in a package with some tools and a neat bundle and took them to our hollow cache tree, 50 feet northeast of our camp, where we had about six more packages hid. I slid them into the tree through a hole about 6 feet from the ground and heard them fall down into the hollow stump of the others. My plan is to come and get them when Uncle arrives. In the meantime, they're safe and dry. But at 10 o'clock, a big tractor with a bulldozer came right through the brush like an elephant and pushed that tree down towards our camp. Then he backed up and got some more trees and piled them up. Our other diaries were buried 6 feet under the earth. We saw the bulldozer moving near us and heard words in English and assumed some Americans were still at work. March 1st. If God will only send some rain, we'll catch it for ourselves. I looked at my broken cache tree sticking up from the ground and debris buried 4 feet. We made a special 2-day cache for leaving if the shelling broke out suddenly. We still think help is only a matter of waiting for the sea to calm down. March 2nd. We caught 3 gallons of rainwater, which should help us over the hump. We went and watched with envy a Jap building going up inside of our dugout with 8 of our carpenters working on it. One is Davis, and another is Dick Myers, also a good friend. I may slip them a note if I get a chance. They seem to have only one guard, and he doesn't seem to rush them. Everyone seems good and well-fed, but I still think we'll string out our luck as long as she lasts. March 4th. Building progressing fine 200 feet from us, and we know several workmen, but shall not make the effort to contact them yet. Fred wants to go join them. I'm afraid he'll stay with me until the food's all eaten, then he'll join them. That's Fred the Boots. March 4th. Hammer goes on nearby while I read Hilton's Random Harvest. I'm getting a little exercise, but I'm very tired. March 5th. Japs nearly stepped on us. This is the ninth close call. I've lost terror I had of them at first. Now that I see so many of our boys are working around them. The Japs used decoy trail I made about a half hour after I finished it. I'm very weak, growing more so each day. I'm not sick, but very thin legs and arms, only one half the normal size, and my knees won't control. I just stumble along wherever we want to go, and still, when I sit or lie down, I'm perfectly comfortable and not really ill. March 6th. I'm thinking about all the food I'm going to have when I get home. Chicken, rabbit, turkey. I'll build a new canning house in the ranch in the shade under the trees. Lots of hammering on the building nearby. We had to build a new trail to shunt visitors still further away. So they're so wise to be making these decoy trails. If they didn't make these decoy trails, surely they would have been found out. March 7th. In the garden, ate 2 raw seed potatoes placed by Japs and helped our vegetable diet and starches this way. We're going to catch booby birds tonight and cook only breast, liver, heart, and fat. Yum. March 8th. Ate three booby birds entrails for breakfast. Yum. Our first hot food in 77 days. We found our first egg last night, but Fred broke it. He's impatient and left-handed like Pinky Gibson. Does anybody know Pinky Gibson? I did a Google search. I couldn't find out. Must be some character in the 40s. I've no fear of the Japs, even if they catch us now, seeing how the other boys have been treated. Last night was so weak and tired, I could hardly get back to camp. I just heard voices near, so I'm going to hug the ground a while. March 10th. 10 more days to your birthday, Fritzy, and I want to somehow get word to you so that you can enjoy it more. Booby birds are starting to lay and frigates hatching. Trees are getting flowers. Spring is almost here. Now, imagine that. He's up over 70 days and still is optimistic. And this is the day that Scotty's diary ends at this moment, but his adventures in captivity hardly begin. So this is the end of the formal diary. And now we're in the epilogue. That same afternoon, March 9th, in fact, due to leap year, while foraging for food, he walked almost into the arms of 67-year-old Ted F. Hensel of Burbank, Washington, a carpenter who was working for the Japanese. Aghast at the bearded, dirty, rag-clad fugitives who stood tottering before him, Hensel cried, "You can't be living men. You're already identified as dead and buried." finally convinced that Stevens and Scotty were living men rather than ghosts, Hensel said, "You two look terrible. Better give yourselves up. The Japs won't hurt you. They're treating us fine. Better come in with me." The two hungry, thin scarecrows held a war council, and Scotty finally said to Fred, "You want to go in now, I'm with you." So the two gave themselves up together, having been, as Scotty says, without ever serious quarrel, just like brothers to the end. The Japanese naval officers were inclined to treat the fugitives as had been predicted by Hensel. Ironically, Hensel himself was to die May 1st, 1943 at Sasebo, the horror camp in Japan, where the naval jailers were as merciless as those on Wake were tolerant. An official interpreter named Katsumai, however, claimed that the two men were spies planted by the Americans. They were stripped and their identification marks checked with company lists. They were then taken out into the brush camps and told to dig up their radio or be shot. "Go ahead and shoot," said Scotty. Katsumai persuaded the Navy to throw both of them to jail and informed them that they would be shot in 5 days. Scotty had to give an exhibition with his crossbow, shooting rats, to prove it was not a secret weapon. Each day they were reminded of the number of days they had left. They were kept apart and fed only bread and water. Their last day came and they were allowed to be together and given a hearty meal. Scotty said, "I guess this is the payoff, Fred." And Fred responded, "I can't believe it." At nightfall, their diet was suddenly returned to bread and water. Katsumai came and informed them that their shooting sentence had been postponed because Tokyo had failed to give its approval. Both were released and told that if they returned to the brush, they would be shot. On March 20th, his wife's birthday, Scotty returned to the brush, found his cash tree, and dug out his diaries. 2 months later, after the fugitives saw what they had missed, when the Japanese executed Julius Hoffmeister of San Francisco for stealing liquor and being a troublemaker, as Scotty saw it, a grave was dug 2 feet wide by 5 feet long. The Japs made Hoffmeister crouch on his hands and knees. A Jap officer took his sword, laid the blade once against the American's neck, brought it back like a golf club, and then down on his neck, severing his head with a single blow. His arteries spurted blood into the trench, so the body was placed there and covered. Still inseparable, Scotty and Fred were taken in September 1942 to Sasebo Camp, where 53 Americans out of the 265 from Wake died in 18 months of hard labor and starvation, with many cases of pneumonia and beating. They survived and were found in Camp No. 23 in central Kyushu by the Chicago Daily News correspondent, his name's Weller, accompanying prisoner recovery teams. So, the casualties on Wake, Japanese, 820 killed. They lost a light cruiser, two destroyers, and two patrol boats. 7 to 8 aircraft, 20 damaged. The Marine Corps thinks they had 21 shot down and 51 damaged by flak. And they would massage these numbers. And gee. Americans, 130 killed, 49 wounded, 2 MIA. They lost 12 aircraft, 433 military, and 1,104 civilian POWs, of whom 5 military were killed in January of 42, and 98 civilian POWs killed in October of 1943. In addition, 15 military and 82 civilians died as POWs. That's my source, George Weller, first into Nagasaki, and that's my talk. Thank you very much. It's been a great audience. I apologize. As you know, I was a sports announcer, like I was calling a hockey game and a horse race there. Read the diary. But it's an hour to get through it and to put it in my own vernacular. But I appreciate you for being patient. Does anybody have any questions before I go on that? I think there's a great... Yes?
You said they would watch the signaling at night?
Yes.
Could they actually understand what was being communicated? And was there any information to be gained from it?
Well, the Japanese code was different from our standard Morse code, and although we did have their, what's the name of the code? We did have their key to their code, but the flashing, no, but they knew it was some sort of flashing lights. But imagine that, lying on your belt. Actually, they were sitting on their butt, lying down the whole time, so it was tough. But thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much.